A is for Alcoholic is a program about recovery. My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic.
And my name is Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic.
Join us as we go through the alphabet of alcoholism, one letter at a time. But I thought that, a good place to start would be the beginning, obviously. And I thought, on this going A is for alcoholic. So what does that mean to you? How do you define the term alcoholic? How do you define yourself as an alcoholic? Do you? I mean, I think that you do. I mean, I do, but...
Yeah, I absolutely define myself as an alcoholic. Because I know. I think it's something in my opinion. If it's something that you're in denial of, I don't know. It's a hard way to phrase it without sounding like a dick.
Well, so go ahead and sound like a dick.
Okay, well, the thing is, the way I look at it is, as far as my alcoholism is concerned, and looking at what I've read on the literature in 12-step programs is that there was always an intense craving for alcohol, and once I started drinking, I didn't stop until the machine wound down, until I fell asleep, until I passed out. There was no falling asleep, it's just passed out. But that process would be repeated over and over again. The way I found my alcoholism, I was what I guess some people would consider a high bottom, mid bottom drunk. I didn't end up in the extremities of alcohol, as far as where alcoholism will take you. I maintained some semblance of work, but as far as my personal life, I was suffering. I was in pain a lot. I lived through hundreds of thousands of hangovers, despite that, I still drank. I still kept drinking, and I needed to. I felt the need to drink, and I think that's what made me realize that I not only had a problem with alcohol, but I was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I can get into details. I'm not. Yeah,
you don't need to. It's entirely up to you, but.
If you know, I don't mind being, I'm an open book. I mean, if you're dealing with this thing in your life, you know where it's at. So I guess the thing about me sounding like a dick is if you know where you're at and the patterns are there and you're still walking around saying I'm not an alcoholic, well, in my opinion, you're in total fucking denial. And you're just lying to yourself.
Denial being another symptom.
Of alcoholism, absolutely, yeah. That's mm-hmm. That's one of the big boys,
Yeah, yeah. I think about it. So yeah, I guess it'll be 3 years this weekend for me, and 4 years for you, and I always think about, okay, so it's definitely there's some allergic reaction that happens because I absolutely, like you said, you lose control and you can't help it, and I have a reaction. I have an allergic reaction, which includes severely impaired judgment, my pants coming off at the wrong time, getting sick, not making any sense, and, being just complete, it's a personality change, so mm-hmm. it's like, I guess it's an allergic reaction of the body which affects the mind, and then, like you said, that obsession and that craving that doesn't stop, even though you are far beyond the point of being sick.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just thinking, it's like, what is alcoholism? It's an allergic reaction. It's this craving that you can't stop. And then where does it begin? And I was trying to think about, and I've asked people in my past, and I tried to ask my mom and friends that I knew from a long time ago, like, when was the first time I ever took a drink? When's the first time I could remember taking a drink? Mm-hmm. And, it was at this, I think it was at this wedding, and I must have been like 14 or 15, and running around, and I still have this vague memory of like, everybody talking to my mom, and I was just like stealing champagne and like having this giddy weird time at somebody else's wedding at this very young age, And I thought, okay, was that when it started? But then I started thinking about, like, as a kid, and as a little kid, and growing up with somebody who, you know, growing up with an alcoholic and abusive father. Like, as a little kid, you don't, you know, we sit here and we talk a lot about what things mean, and, you know, we're using, we have words for the things that we feel, we have definitions for the ways that we think, but at a, as a kid at like 5 or 6 or 7 years old, you don't even know what the word resentment is. You don't even, it's not in your vocabulary.
There's no concept.
So you're just sitting there as this little kid dealing with whatever, you know, and whatever. In my case, it was this alcoholic and abusive father, and just trying to understand it, and you're just like completely confused, you're tight, you're sad, and you're mad. And so then how do you deal with the resentment at 7? I can barely deal with them at 41 some days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then you grow up with this as like your baseline. It's no wonder that you want to find like a release valve.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the effective one, isn't it? I mean, that's why we get into this. This is why we end up here, you know, is because it is so fucking effective. At the beginning, it is so effective. I mean, my first drink, if I went all the way back, I remember it. I absolutely remember it. I was like 5 or 6, and it was a glass of ice and a Cutty Sark sitting on the hood of an Eldorado. You know, my grandmother, in the front yard of my grandmother's trailer, and I picked it up and took a big swig thinking it was tea, and it turned out to be scotch, and it tasted awful, but it felt good. Like, the burn felt good. My gut felt good. There was, like, embers in my stomach, you know. And I didn't revisit it again until I was a teenager, you know.
When was that first one? How old?
God, I was like 5 or 6. I mean, I picked it up and took a big old swig of it and was like, whoa, this ain't iced tea. But I didn't spit it out. I swallowed it. And then, you know, they were like, don't drink that. And I just walked around feeling that warmth in there as a little kid, you know. My grandfather was an alcoholic. I mean, my parents are alcoholics, you know. Both my grandfathers are alcoholics. So I feel like, yeah, there's a definite, at least as far as circumstantial evidence, as far as I'm concerned, there's a definite genetic factor in there, like a physical factor, because I look at all these years of genetics refined into me. I've always felt like this honed edge of fucking alcoholism, you know, like, but it was so, it's always worked so effectively. I mean, what better way to deal with the resentment than to unplug? Or what better way to deal with the horrible way you feel about yourself than to inflate your own ego? You know, and then all of a sudden you're charming and you can talk to girls and you're not walking with a slouch. And, you know, seductive is the wrong word, because the alcohol in itself is inert. But then once you put it into, I'm not even just an alcoholic, into most people drink for, not because, you know, it's because it's fun, because you lower your inhibitions and you feel bigger than. You know, alcoholics drink because that's just what alcoholics do. It's the way to feel normal at one point, but then normal feels like garbage. You know, it's a slippery slope, you know.
It's a very, very small window that is unsustainable.
Dude, and it keeps getting smaller. That's the problem with drinking alcoholically. It just gets smaller and smaller every time, you know.
I keep coming back to this. You remember when I lived on that that apartment in Nickerson?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And so I remember this. We used to have these parties, and it was always this big fun thing. And we're going to invite a bunch of people into our apartment, and you know, everybody brings a bottle of booze with like the first letter of their first name or something like that. You know, it was like this fun little game, and I'll make sure to have ginger ale and cranberry and ice, and you know, a bag of pretzels and Cheetos. And I remember getting dressed up and, like, you know, putting a tie on and, you know, getting all fancy. And I had these like olive green slacks that I really liked and felt good. And, you know, I'm waiting for people to show up, and they start to show up, and everyone's having a good time. And there's, you know, people are there, and everyone's there and excited to see me and come over. And we're having this awesome time. Right.
Yeah.
And everything's great. It's when I lived with Danny over there, and we're just having like this awesome time. And it I then woke up and I was on the floor in the living room by myself, completely alone. The 30 people that were there were gone, and my pants were down around my ankles, and I had no shirt on. And, you know, like, it's kind of funny. But in retrospect, it's like, where was that window of, like, it being fun for me and God being fun for anybody else? Obviously, it wasn't. They all just left.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you woke up in the morning, or it was later on that night?
No, this was like only a few hours later.
Oh, like, wow.
I had ingested so much that I had passed out to the point of everyone was like, yeah, we should probably go find a pool hall or go home. Or I didn't know this was going to happen. This wasn't right on the flyer.
So you didn't even make it through the window. The window was just shut. You just hit it. Yes. Rolled down the wall. Yeah.
Right on my head. And so it's just, I kind of think about those things and I have those memories of like, gosh, was that, when was that, how long was that fun for? Was it even fun? And it was just that sort of idea of I have to.
Yeah.
And always the guise of we're going to have a good time or we're going to share it with somebody. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just not good.
No, I mean, think of all the preparation you did and everything, and you were so excited, and yeah, and then it just ends with you don't even know. All you know is you're drinking, and then you wake up. You know, that's the fog. That's beyond the fog. That's the, you know, the valley beyond the fog. That's the blackout. You know.
Yes.
You know, I hear them talk about blackouts like they're funny things, and I guess when I was drinking, it was a funny thing, but now when I hear it, I feel bad. Like, it hurts me. It makes me feel bad for that person, because I know the aftermath, and I know what happens during, you know, I have it it's like my wife was a fucking stenographer, dude. You know, she would come at me with every fucking detail. But yeah, I mean, I remember having those nights alone. I remember having those nights with you, you know, and it's just not a sustainable way of life for me personally, you know, and that's why I had to stop. And once I stopped, it wasn't as easy as just stopping. Like, I had to give it a name, and I had to realize that once I had stopped, it wasn't just a matter of like, okay, I'm done drinking, I'm drinking too much. It was that's when the obsession kicked in even worse, is when I wasn't drinking. That's how I feel. When I wasn't drinking, I thought about drinking all the fucking time. Every 10 seconds, man. It was like you're not drinking, man. You're not drinking. You're not drinking. You know, like, it just kept repeating itself.
Why aren't you drinking? What's the matter with you?
Why aren't you drinking?
Don't you want to feel better?
Can't you be normal like everybody else?
Right.
But then I look back and all my best friends are alcoholics. Well, I mean, I can't speak for every one of my closest friends, but I know a small handful that, you know, are totally professed, self-professed alcoholics, you know, that we all drank. And it's what we did.
Even those that haven't professed it are certainly drinking in an alcoholic fashion, some might say.
Well, it's just not sustainable for me personally. Now, if any of those people, you know, feel like that works for them in the moment, my power, you know, my hat's off to them, more power to them. But I also look at it like I can see it. It's like, I've been very open about my alcoholism with everyone around me, especially the people who knew me when I was drinking, because I was very open about my alcoholism when I was drinking alcoholically, you know? So I can't shy away from the fact that, like, I'm a drunk and that's what I do. Now, when I meet newer people, it's a little awkward, you know, to put that label on myself. I don't tend to flit around it, but it doesn't get asked very often. You know, the circles I run in now, it's like my wife, they're all teachers and they all work with my wife. So they're not like, why aren't you drinking? Why aren't you drinking? Like, they could care less. They don't even bring it up. They'll offer me a drink and then I'll say, no, I don't drink. And then that's it, you know?
Yeah. You don't.
Yeah.
It's not something you offer up.
Because, you know, they're going to be like, hey, do you want a beer? And I'm like, no, thanks. I'm a recovering alcoholic. No, I just say, no, I'm not, I don't drink. And if they pry the subject, well, yeah, absolutely. I'll be like, I'm a recovering alcoholic. Like, I've had enough. Yeah. I think I'm good.
Yeah, that's the best advice I ever got. Was
I love it.
You know,
yeah.
those five words, no thanks, I've had enough.
It's great.
And, you know, it works. It's the truth. And everybody understands it on no matter what level they're on. Even if they think they're hammered and they think everybody's hammered with them, you're just like,
yes,
mm-hmm. no thanks, I've had enough, which is very much the truth.
Yeah. And go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, the same thing when people offer you or want to talk about it, and it's, and you know, I think people see it, they see it on you or they see it on me, and they ask me, and I say, no, I don't drink anymore. And either they really want to know why, or they begin to discuss their own concerns with their own behaviors. And
yeah,
you know, it's, you go, well, you know, you got to do what works for you. And I think that that's the best advice I can give anybody, because it doesn't, because I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're going through.
Word. And,
you know, I certainly don't want, it's not, it's, you know, it's never been about judgment. It's never been about telling somebody else how to live their life.
No, it's none of my business. Yeah.
It's just, if you're going to be wasted, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Right. And if you're going to, I think my big problem, these are resentments I need to work through on my own, but it's when people brag to me, or when they're in a group and they're all bragging about how fucked up they get, it always irks me a tiny bit. Like, I look at them mm-hmm. and I'm like, man, you don't know. Y'all look so dumb last night, you don't even realize it, you know? But they were around a bunch of other drunks, so the drunks were like egging them on, you know? Yeah. But yeah, as far as that goes, man, it's just, I just leave it. You know, those are internal things that I think. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I actually love the way you defined alcoholism as an allergy of the body and a malady of the mind, you know, like mm-hmm. it's those two things working in tandem. And that's exactly what it was for me. Exactly. And but I knew it before even the bottom came. I knew it. I knew I'd either end up, God, I hate to sound super dramatic, but I knew I'd either end up dead or in a room.
Yeah.
You know, in a 12-step meeting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I had moments where I literally had real, you know, I mean, they were all real physical reactions or allergic reactions, but I would get super flushed and mm-hmm. my skin would get red and blotchy and it would start in my chest and it would creep up my neck and all over my face and my breathing would get really short, like somebody who had a peanut allergy. And my first thought was, well, I just need to drink through this. It'll pass. So the one thing that I'm ingesting and imbibing that is causing this, you know, inability to breathe and making my entire skin crawl and burn, I think, oh, well, if I just numb it with a little bit more of this, everything, it'll pass.
Yeah, and that is the definite process of an alcoholic, you know. Pour more booze on it.
I just need to put some extra ice in my next drink and I'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll rehydrate yourself that way, dude. Come on. I'm like a camel over here, you know.
You mentioned something else about you saying being very vocal in being an alcoholic while drinking. And we may have talked about this before, but I remember those things where I'd say, yeah, me too. I used to say it all the time. No big deal. This is how I am. This is what I mm-hmm. do. Oh, man. Yep. Just another hangover or whatever. Yep. And I never thought that I was hiding anything until I started to think back. And I would think about, you know, having people over to the house and maybe cooking dinner. And I'd say, yeah, I'll be in the kitchen. I'll help cook. And I would do the cooking so that I could be closer to where the booze was. Hey, anybody want another glass of wine? And I would pour myself a nice heavy one and then pour them like a regular glass, or I might take an extra drink while I was in there. And I was totally hiding it because in my mind, I thought, oh, well, I need more than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just making sure to take care of myself, and then you guys can have whatever's left over.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah.
And so I was always hiding it, even when I thought that I wasn't. Even when I thought that, you know, I was in some twisted way proud of how much I could drink or how fucked up I could get or whatever.
And it was so romantic to be like that. you mm-hmm. know. Well, yeah, all your favorite writers, all my favorite writers, all my favorite movies, all my favorite actors, they had that dark root. It was like a root, you know, like a dark root growing in them, and that was like style. You know what I mean? That was the illusion, the lie
Mad Men and stuff. Jack Kerouac,
yeah,
and
Kerouac
Bukowski and
Hunter S. And get me the golf shoes and all that shit. You know, like.
Mm-hmm.
But look at Hunter S. He shot himself in his brain. You know, I mean, yeah. He was sick. He was getting old. But look at Bukowski, man. He, like, died of liver cancer. Kerouac puked his guts out. He mm-hmm. puked himself to death and had liver failure in his mom's bathroom. You know, I mean, we all don't die pretty, but you know, I don't want to die that ugly either. You know,
like, I just don't want to die in pain.
Yeah, man. Me neither.
And you know, this idea of it having to be, what was I talking about with, we were saying something to the effect of, I was talking with my girlfriend and we were saying something to the effect of, you get to this level, and maybe it starts from childhood, where you tolerate a certain level of pain and that becomes normal. And then it's all about what you can endure. Oh, it's not, yeah. It doesn't hurt that bad. Or, oh, it's fine, you know, I can deal with this. Or, you know, and even if it was a physical pain or an emotional pain or a mental, you know, frustration or whatever it was, then you're now, your baseline is in pain. And
yeah. mm-hmm.
now without alcohol, I kind of see this as, oh, well, I can be nice to myself. I can live in ease some right. days, and I don't require some potion to, you know, give me the illusion of that.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. I can love myself, you know, but it's just such a weird, insipid thing to twist your brain around. I don't know.
Very much so. I think about the list. I can write a list. If I could sit down and write a list of the things I regret while I was drinking, and then, you know, how long would that list be compared to the list of things I regret right now that I've done? You know what I mean? I maybe regret two or three things, whereas while I was drinking, I regretted it all. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't even like these big lifelong regrets, like I didn't travel or write the great American novel or whatever. It was just, I regret fucking waking up. You know what I mean? I regret all that shit I said yesterday. You know, I regret not getting a handle instead of a fifth, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And yes. Now I'm like, dang, I regret playing Conan Exiles for 4 hours today. Shouldn't have played video games so long. Pissed me off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. you know, you, just take the, just delete the game and,
yeah, I'm dumping that fucking game. So can't wait to
your regrets are better.
Yeah, absolutely, they're better, and they're mm-hmm. they're fewer. So it's like, I mean, I don't know how far into the actual recovery itself is going. I used to hear people at meetings say that the obsession was gone and that, you know, their lives are great, and I thought they were so full of shit because I was like so wet out of the rain, like just like, this is bullshit. You're trying to sell me Amway here. And now I'm sitting here going, well, is the obsession gone? To an extent, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the physical obsession is gone.
Yeah.
The mental obsession, as far as still regarding it and thinking of it. I mean, I don't think about taking a drink at all, really, very often. I mean, if it ever comes up, it's usually like an impulsive kind of thing. It's never, I'm going to drink, you know. But the immediate desperation and obsession are gone. And those are the big changes in my life, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, those aren't the only ones, but...
But those are big mental changes, you know, as far as being in the state of drinking and being in the state of not drinking, you know? But yeah, there's a lot of them. There are tons of them. I could sit here and list them all off, you know?
The changes, the list of changes, yes.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
I mean, but I like that idea of, you know, my regrets are fewer and far between.
Man, it's easy. Feels good.
Mm-hmm. And
you know,
there was something else I heard somebody say, was that they talked about, and you know, I think they were talking about it on a bigger scale, and they were talking about fear, and being afraid of something, and whether it was doing something, or they were talking about life-changing moments, whether it was quitting your job or mm-hmm. trying something new or quitting drinking. And they were talking about the half-life of fear. And wow. I thought this yeah. was an awesome idea, was that it's not that you don't get afraid anymore. It's just that the reaction time between when I get afraid and then when I'm okay, it gets less and less and less. You know, you go, oh, they're going to, I think the example she was giving was they're going to repossess my car. And then right. it's like, well, what happens when they do that? Well, it's just a car. And then I'm okay. Or I can't, you know, my credit score is not good. And like, well, you're not your credit score. So take a breath, relax. And, you know, but I just love that idea of the half-life of fear. Because I know when I was drinking, I was afraid of everything and everybody, including myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think nowadays when I think about getting scared of something, whether it's something I want to do or something that needs to be done or a conflict, whether it's a conflict at work or having to, you know, things like today, spending an hour on the phone with Comcast when I was drinking, yeah. I would have put that off indefinitely.
Yeah.
I would have paid the extra $30 or $50 a month, or I just wouldn't have paid the bill at all, which is probably what would have happened.
Seems more par for the course, yeah. And then they would have shut it off, and then the fear would have been running around trying to get the $400 to get it back on
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so today I had this great conversation with a guy from Mexico City, and
you Cesar.
Know, me and Cesar were for. Just. I talked to him about the new Mexican president. I asked him how his fourth was going to be, and he's like, no, sir.
There's no fourth here, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He just said, yeah, it's my day off. And I said, all right, good. You should enjoy that. Mine too. For very different reasons. But it was easy. I was like, oh, okay. So I'll just get on the phone and let them go through the packages and try and talk me into this and talk me into this. And then I said, oh, okay, that sounds good. Let's do that. Thanks, man.
Let's do that. And yeah.
It was easy. It was another thing I could check off my list rather than letting it sit.
They talk you into the landline? They always talk you into the landline.
So he talked me into, I got the landline, but I don't have a phone.
Yeah, neither do I. And I had the landline forever. And I was just like, man, I'm just using this. This doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what to do with it. I mean, maybe
I don't know. Get a home phone. Make it weird.
Should I get a nice cordless?
Nice cordless, dude. So you can walk around the house, you know.
Get an answering machine on it?
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. With those wacky answering machine messages? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's home. Nobody's home.
Yeah, oh, it's just so much, it's so much easier to deal with the minutiae of life that used to drive me insane, or I would just avoid entirely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In that there's yeah. just there's a lot more peace of mind.
Yeah. To it all. So. Yeah, I have to agree. There's moments, but I mean there will always be moments, drinking or not. But the sober moments, like you said, tend not to avalanche so quickly. You know,
well, it just, you know, there wouldn't be this, you wouldn't wake up in a deficit. I always felt like I was starting my day in this deficit with this hangover.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in the early days of drinking, I thought of it as some sort of thing to like overcome, and that there was strength in this, you know, in having a hangover, and I would fight through it, or I would have some more to drink, and I could beat this challenge. And then I started to realize it was a deficit that caused everything else in my life to take a back seat to a headache or the diarrhea or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. sort of awful thing that I had to sit in regret, or some awful thing that, you know, would just, I wouldn't know that I was going to have to regret until later because I didn't remember.
Oh, and yeah.
There's like this superpower now where I wake up and I feel great.
You're like, oh, fuck, I feel normal. What is this magic? What is happening?
I think it's a wholly better way to live.
Absolutely. absolutely. And you know, I mean, I think it would help out even people who, I mean, I think it would help out even people who don't drink, living by some type of program. You know, I heard it said that we all, I mean, if we're getting into the subject of program, I guess I'm branching out that way, but it might have been a British guy with the hair. Russell Brand was saying that we all live by programs regardless of whether or not we give it a name. You know, you have a program of things you do. There's a routine, a program. So if you just, you know, list, you know, live by a program that's a positive one, you get much more fulfilling experience out of life, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely when I was drinking, my program was how can I get another drink?
Yeah, mine too.
There wasn't much else. That was it.
Mine was sad. It was like just being sad and drinking. Yeah, it was just like the, like a fucking 35-year-old goth guy. Like, come on, you know, like just walking around with sadness and darkness and just so inside myself. You know,
I mean, like that's Robert Smith waking up in the backyard.
Yeah, but waking up in the backyard with the sunburn, you know, covered in ants,
with the sunburn, you know, like, mascara running all over his face.
Yeah. Yeah, just one eye with mascara. But that's what, you know what, I have to say, you know, alcoholism to me, the way I define it is in the act of drinking alcoholically, I was alone and I was sad and I didn't want to be alive. And now in the act of being a recovering alcoholic, and I give myself that label because I know that, you know, I'll always have it with me. It won't go. It's just going to be there until they figure out some type of, I don't know, operation or I don't know. Anyway, in the act of being a recovered alcoholic, it's not, I'm not alone. Like, I don't feel alone anymore. I feel sad about things, but you know, that's normal. Comes with comes with having a brain like this. I think most people feel sad. I think it's good to be in touch with the sadness, but you know, you can't let it overwhelm you. And then you pour bourbon on top of it, and that's all you're gonna be. At least that's all I was, you know.
Bourbon and sadness. So it's,
there are two very opposite sides of the coin, you know. I guess that's the way I define my alcoholism, is sad and alone in a hole, trying to get out of the hole by digging deeper into the hole.
trying to dig, thinking you can dig your way out by going further down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and I think now I define being an alcoholic, and I've heard it said a lot too. People talk about being a grateful alcoholic, and
right.
I would have to, you know, I would have to agree with that, because I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here with you talking about this stuff if I had not dealt with all that stuff. You know, if I hadn't gone through, if I hadn't spent 18 years or plus, whatever, maybe more, drinking, I wouldn't have found the happiness and the joy that comes with not drinking and going outside and, you know, standing there for a moment in my driveway while this deer eats plums off the ground and just kind of staring at each other, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, and I just kind of looked at her and she's looking at me and we're just looking, trying to figure each other out, you know? And she's like, I'm just over here trying to eat some plums, man. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a walk. And it was a nice little moment that I don't think that I would have, I certainly wouldn't have woken up early enough for that moment if I'd been in the throes of some hangover.
Right.
But
that moment sounds like the scene in a Kevin Spacey movie where they tell him he has brain cancer and he goes outside and sees it and realizes that he's just one with the world. That he's just this tiny little organism riding on a giant rock. You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, there's my mortality. You
know, I think in some the future episodes we'll talk about being one with the world.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to talk about things like meditation and prayer.
Yeah.
Things that have helped me and things that have really kind of relaxed my mind to be able to be open. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I just wanted to say thank you for getting on here and doing this with me, and I hope that you know, we continue to do this for a while and stay sober, and To anybody out there who's listening, I just wanted to say, you know, you are not alone, and you really only have to do it for today.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, just today.
That's it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey. All right, Jerry. We'll see you. We'll see you next time.
Word. See you next time, man. All right.
Thank you for listening to A is for Alcoholic. Our music is by Neglect. You can find more of his music at neglectsound.bandcamp.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And contact us at aisforalcoholic@gmail.com.